It all kicks off in 50 days, so how match fits are we to host the FIFA Women's World Cup? The first whistle blows when the Football Ferns take on Norway at Eden Park on July 20th. It's the biggest women's sporting event in the world, which New Zealand is co-hosting with Australia, and it's the last of the big four in women's sports in New Zealand following the Women's Cricket World Cup, the Women's Rugby World Cup, and the International Women in Sport Conference. The defending champions, USA, are playing three pool games here, bringing with them an estimated 20,000 of an expected 30,000 overseas fans. Also coming, another 3,500 accredited visitors, including teams, referees and media. An estimated economic windfall of $200 million has been calculated, and a global audience of at least $1.5 billion is anticipated. Local clubs have been busy bringing stadia and facilities up to FIFA's exacting standards in the run-up to the tournament, and chief among other legacies anticipated long after the final whistle, it's hoped young women and girls will take up the sport. Our guests are Chief Operating Officer on behalf of FIFA, Jane Patterson. Kia ora, Jane.
Morena tato.
And with us also the Chief Operating Officer of the FIFA Women's World Cup in New Zealand football, Paula Hanson. Good morning, Paula.
Morena.
So we're straight into the intricacies that is a FIFA event, Jane. And can you begin explaining your role, how that fits into FIFA's structure and therefore meeting its expectations for this tournament?
Certainly. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for the New Zealand side of the event. Obviously, it's a co-hosted tournament with one CEO and a Chief Operating Officer on each side of the Tasman. And really, my role is responsibility for the operational delivery of the tournament to ensure that our stadiums, our training sites are ready. Yeah, as you said in your introduction, Catherine, they have world-class standards with FIFA, as they should for a Women's World Cup of this size and scale. So my role is to ensure that we are ready to deliver to the FIFA standards, but also to New Zealand standards. You know, we're renowned hosts of major events. We have a long history in doing this. So I'm tasked with ensuring we're ready.
So where are things at? What's keeping you awake at night, and what is still to be done? Just run us through the sorts of challenges.
Well, we've had three years to plan for this, so that's a long time to ensure that we are ready to deliver all aspects of the tournament. But at this stage, look, we've gone through most of the major milestones in the lead up to event. 100 days to go. We've launched mascots. We've recruited our volunteers. We've launched a school program. We're ready. The trophy tour is making its way around the world and about to arrive in New Zealand. Excuse me. And our stadiums are ready. Our pitches are ready. Our training sites, which have undergone a huge amount of infrastructural change with permanent lights, upgrades to facilities, gender-neutral bathrooms, we've undertaken all of that. What we have ahead of us, and anything's keeping me awake at night, it's ensuring that New Zealanders maximise this opportunity, because as you said in your intro, it's the biggest Women's World Cup, it's the biggest Women's World Sport event. And so this is just an opportunity for New Zealanders to get out and see the best in the world from all over the world do what they do in their own backyard. And it's such a size and scale that, like New Zealand hasn't hosted before, that's a very unique opportunity for New Zealanders. So I just want to ensure that they get out, buy their tickets, which are priced really affordably from $10 and $20 for children and adults. And we've done that for a reason, so that it's accessible for anybody to be able to get into a stadium and enjoy this very unique opportunity and this world-class football that will be played.
So where is the marketing at? Because we're close to the start of June. Kickoff is 20th July. And look, I've seen some articles, I've seen some kind of, I've seen open letters from the captain of the US team, which is this huge draw card we're going to talk about. But what's the marketing budget like, and when are we going to really see vision and the hype around this? Is there a sufficient budget for that?
Yes, there is, and this is building. You know, a marketing program builds, and we have our own marketing program. Paula, who you're going to speak to as well, New Zealand Football have their marketing program, particularly around their own football ferns, and then each of our match cities also have their marketing program. Which, as you will know, you know, the cities you walk around, you'll see the bunting tape, you see the flags, you'll see banners, you'll see cross street banners, you'll see billboards. I was in Wellington last week. I saw it all around Frank Kitts Park and down towards the Sky Stadium. So I think you'd have to be living under a rock not to know that this tournament is on once we come into this final 50 days.
Is there a marketing budget for television and online and digital promotion?
Yeah. Yes, there is.
And when will that kick in?
That is kicking in as we speak. Literally. So we've got a digital campaign. You'll see through some of the television broadcasts leading into the television shows that who will be Sky, who's broadcasting, also doing their build up. So I hope that no one is missing anywhere through any of the mediums that they use to keep up to date with events and or news. We'll know that this tournament is on through any one of those mediums.
$55 million of taxpayer money has gone into this. You mentioned the upgrading of stadiums, practice facilities. I think there's four new fields that are going to be getting floodlights. There's going to be 40 hours more sports field time available in Auckland. So that's some taxpayer money going in to have a broader benefit. Those clubs, by the way, are benefiting as well. But I guess another issue is how we're going to cater for 20,000 USA fans, I presume travelling pretty much en masse. We've been very fortunate with the pool draw that we've got three USA games here in New Zealand. The final, should the US make it, the final is in Australia. But three pool games here. And how well geared up are we vis-a-vis accommodation, transport and their experience? Jane?
Well, this is where the experience of the host cities come into it. They are the transport experts. They are used to moving these large groups of people around when it comes to these large-scale events, as we see with All Black matches at Eden Park. They know how to move people around their cities. And then we've been working closely with the hospitality sector to ensure that they are ready. We know that there have been challenges post-COVID. You know, staffing levels are not where they were pre-COVID going into restaurants, hotels. But we know also, and we trust and have faith, that the country stands up when it has these opportunities to showcase our hospitality, our manaakitanga, to the world. We know that we stand up. We've seen that most recently with the Rugby World Cup coming up and the ICC cricket, both of which you referred in your intro. They were, you know, just coming out of that COVID period. And so we know that the response is coming, and we hope that the hospitality sector will be ready off the back of a couple of very difficult years for them to maximise this opportunity.
It's interesting you just named probably our two biggest sports, at least when it comes to eyeballs support, summer v winter anyway. And not necessarily participation, but certainly the enthusiasm that fans have and the amount of time they spend watching those sports. And the question is whether that same awareness of the size of women's football globally, and particularly that USA team, has sunk in to some of those providers. Are you talking to the councils, for example, about public transport logistics?
Absolutely, and we have been for 18 months, 2 years. And these are weekly collaborations with all the stakeholders, the police, the emergency services, the transport systems. We will only be as good as everybody doing this together. It can't be an individual response. It can't be just FIFA Women's World Cup entities' response, New Zealand Football on their own, the cities, the support from the government. This is a moment in time for the country, And how we will make the most of that and maximize that opportunity is if everybody literally hold hands and moves forward together. And we've had a couple of years to plan for that, and we're very well placed with our cities to prepare them for that fantastic influx of people. And that will the teams, the media, their friends and family, the ardent football fans that will come to New Zealand. And what a wonderful opportunity for New Zealanders to be able to see this world-class football in our own country.
Stay with us, Jane. I want to come back about a couple of other matters. But Paula Henson from New Zealand Football, let's bring you in here. How are those ticket sales going, by the way?
So tickets have been on sale for some time. We're promoting more ticket sales, and we want everybody to be connected to the FIFA Women's World Cup. So through our networks, New Zealand Football and our federations and our club structure, we are always encouraging every New Zealander, every visitor, to make sure they get their tickets earlier and don't miss out for those games that will be sellouts. So, yeah, as Jane mentioned, $10, $20 tickets for a FIFA Women's World Cup. It's an incredible price for an amazing opportunity. So we just encourage everybody to get in for tickets now so they don't miss out.
Is it the case that there's been a lot of pre-sales for those international visitors, but have domestic sales been quite slow, Paula?
Well, traditionally, New Zealanders tend to decide late in the piece, so close to game day, depending on the weather or their other plans. We know that's the behaviour certainly in New Zealand, and so we're encouraging people to buy early. Stadiums will sell out. Some of the big games have had an incredibly high number of sales already. So while we respect and acknowledge that as our I guess preferred behaviour of buying tickets late, our biggest concern from a football perspective is our communities will miss out if they leave it too late.
What are the total number? What's the total number, by the way? It's about 100,000 sold already, I understand, for the New Zealand-hosted matches to overseas. So how many more left if we do sell out most venues? And obviously the sellouts will be some of these big names perhaps and others not so, but how many more left with 100,000 gone?
Yeah, actually, Jane, you might have to help me here because what happens with the structure of the FIFA Women's World Cup is New Zealand Football are supporting FIFA in the area of ticket sales and selling out the stadium. So,
Understood.
top of
Jane, do
my
you
head,
have a figure,
I
an
don't have
up-to-date
that
figure?
number.
So we've sold about just around 930,000 tickets across both countries.
Right.
About 230,000 of those have been sold in New Zealand,
Okay.
and we would be reaching about 550,000 tickets to sort of sell out our stadiums across our network of games.
Okay,
So
so
we're
there are plenty
around
of there are
halfway
plenty
there.
left. Okay, there are plenty left. All right, Paula, I want to come back to you also. Another key matter, and this was raised, I think, by Paul Eiffel, former professional footballer now coaching Samoa, I think. This happens, it seems, with every sport, every women's sport, and particularly those we might dub the oh, they used to be dubbed minority sports, so I wouldn't want to call it that now. But we saw it with the likes of the Cricket World Cup, fantastic tournament hosted in New Zealand. Wins a great final, and you know, literally thousands of girls want to take up the sport. And I've watched it happen multiple times with these sports. If you're not ready, if the response isn't there, those players drift, and they can drift within 2 or 3 years. I think $10 million of that taxpayer funding has gone towards so-called legacy benefits, and some of that's come straight to New Zealand football. What is the plan for growing the girls' and the women's game off the back of this event, Paula?
Yeah, absolutely. So our legacy plan, our leverage and legacy plan, Aotearoa United Legacy Starts Now, was launched about 18 months ago. So what we recognised in football was legacy doesn't start the thinking or the action at the time of the final whistle of the tournament. So for over 18 months now, we have developed and are building our systems within New Zealand football and our federations to be ready for the significant influx we're expecting. We've already started and achieved a number of legacy initiatives that sit in our plan. So the Wellington Phoenix, having a professional A-League team, is a really good example. of how the thinking was done and actions have taken place well before the tournament. You know, we've recently had a new Fantails program launch, which is specifically targeted to attract new girls to the game, 4 to 12 year olds. And we'll have another program kicking it coming out shortly for 13 to 19 year old girls, so the youth space. Those programs recognise that joining a club and entering the traditional structure of football may not be what every young girl or their family wants at this point in time. So these are come and have a go, have fun with your friends, learn some more skills and activities. So it's shifting the dial away from the only access point for football being football clubs. Importantly, those programs will be delivered by our federations or our regional organisations and football clubs. So it's a really nice way of really focusing on what we know young girls want in terms of being active, and that's to have fun with their friends. So those are two key programs that are one's up and running, one's soon to be released. And then we're doing some other legacy programs. We've had now over 70 women graduate from our Women in Leadership program. Our regional Women in Leadership program start this year, and that sits in legacy as a way to make sure that well past the tournament, our game has confident leaders in the game, confident female decision makers that will go on to influence the future of the game years ahead.
Paul Eiffel's point was to training coaches and referees and all the support network you need for the organised sport. I hear what you're saying. There's just come and have a go and play with your friends. But there will also be young women and young athletes who want to be the next, you know, goalkeeper or the next star here or the next professional player. And speaking of the clubs, you had the Western Springs issue, one of your biggest clubs, and a rift, it seems, between some of their senior women players and the organisers of the club, and a bit of a walkout there, frankly. And are there still some issues with the established clubs really getting their heads around fair treatment of their women players? And this isn't just about equal pay, as those players made the point. It's about being able to play on the artificial turf. It's about being able to have proper facilities, and it's about respect. Are there still issues within the sport?
Yes, I think there are still challenges, and the challenges that New Zealand Football and federations are supporting the clubs through. It's important to recognise that Football New Zealand has been focused on girls and women and now our wider communities for some time, which is why we bid for the FIFA Women's World Cup, to really amplify and provide opportunities. In terms of our coaching, our refereeing, there are programs in place, female-only programs. There are mentor programs already in place. We have a club support program soon to be launched to support the clubs to move to becoming the most inclusive sport in Aotearoa New Zealand. So, you know, with respect to Paul, I know there is a concern that clubs may not be ready. I just ask people to remember that legacy isn't just about the tournament. We have programs and systems in place. We won't see results overnight, but the groundwork is there. And we are increasing activity. You know, there's been investment gone in to create new roles to focus on achieving these legacy outcomes. And, you know, years ahead, we will look back and see the significant change, especially for girls and women. And we will be proud of co-hosting the FIFA Women's World Cup. Okay. If it wasn't for co-hosting this, we wouldn't have had such a spotlight on our game and be making the changes that collectively we are.
Paul, thank you very much. Paul Hanson of New Zealand Football. Just back to Jane Patterson, the Chief Operating Officer for the FIFA Women's World Cup. She's Chief Operating Officer on behalf of FIFA. It's interesting, some of that government funding, I think, went direct to FIFA. We talked about they are fairly demanding in their requirements. And Jane, the other biggie, of course, is the revenue that is earned from broadcasting rights. I know this was another issue with the unbundling of the Women's World Cup from the Men's World Cup. And unfortunately, the time zone not optimal for some of the big European viewing nations. Has that been resolved? Because FIFA was pretty disappointed and pretty vocal about how low the sums that were being offered for the rights to broadcast this were. Where's that got to, Jane?
It's on. It's ongoing, Catherine. The broadcast rights is that whole aspect of the tournament is managed through FIFA in Zurich, which is obviously the head office, because all of the broadcast rights are sold globally and often across, as you noted, other tournaments, not just the women's game. But I do know that it's an ongoing discussion. The focus that we have is on delivering a world-class tournament for New Zealanders and for the teams and those to experience. And the eyeballs that will be on the country as a result of that, because we're expecting up to 2 billion people to be tuning in and watching it, is what the opportunity is for New Zealand globally.
So 320,000 tickets domestically still available. The matches are Auckland, Wellington, Hamilton, Dunedin. Am I correct? Any other cities?
Yeah, that's it. There are four match cities. You know, there's the opening game at Eden Park, Norway versus the Football Ferns. All of the New Zealand Football Ferns games are selling well. You know, there's a great opportunity to see what was the final at USA versus Netherlands was the final at the last World Cup. That's literally a rematch. That's going to be a great game at Wellington Stadium. And then New Zealand also has two quarterfinals and a semi-final. But, you know, look, my message is don't miss it, because it's going to be an unbelievable sporting spectacle. And you don't have to be a football fan to get out and enjoy what this is going to bring, because it's more than just the match. It's something on another scale, and we just really encourage Kiwis to do what they do, put on a coat, get out in the winter, and enjoy live sport for the same price that you could go to the movies for.
Actually, you're probably about a third of the price, half the price.
Exactly.
All right, so 49 more sleeps. Thank you, both of you. Jane Patterson, Paula Hansen.